Radio Prague News.
The government has moved to ease conditions for foreigners employed in the Czech Republic. The European Commission has approved a support scheme for Czech renewables, and proposed changes to the law on electronic cash registers continue to divide the Czech ruling coalition. The Cabinet has approved an amendment to the Foreigners Law which would enable foreign nationals to work in the country for a longer period before needing to extend their visas. Under the amendment, the current 90-day period would be extended to 6 months, and in the event of a significant investment project, even 2 years. The move comes in the wake of criticism regarding the number of bureaucratic hurdles foreigners working in the country face. The proposed amendment will now go to the lower house for debate. The European Commission has approved a support scheme for installations producing renewable energy built in the Czech Republic between 2006 and 2012. The Commission concluded the measure would further EU energy and climate goals without unduly distorting competition. The scheme will have a total budget of 836 billion crowns over its lifetime. Last-minute changes to the law on electronic cash registers proposed last week by the chief author of the bill, Finance Minister Andrej Babiš, continue to divide the ruling coalition. Following a stormy government session on Monday, the Social Democrats failed to pledge support for Mr. Babiš's proposal that e-shops and small entrepreneurs with annual earnings under 250,000 crowns should be exempted from the duty to have electronic cash registers, saying they would vote according to their conscience in the House. Babiš had previously rejected any exemptions to the law, and his proposal, coming just days before the legislation is due to come into force on December 1st, has come under fierce criticism from the Prime Minister. The Czech Republic will gradually increase its annual contributions to the European Cosmic Agency, ESA, the CTK News Agency reported Monday. The government on Monday voted to increase next year's contribution to 830 million crowns, up from 527 last year, and wants to sustain the trend in the future. According to Transport Minister Dan Ťok, the country's higher contributions towards research, particularly in the field of satellite technologies, should help the Czech Republic discard the reputation of being a mere assembly plant in Europe. Leading Czech graphic designer Jan Rajlich has died at the age of 96. Rajlich devoted himself mainly to applied and graphic design. He was a pioneer of the coordinated visual style and a world-recognized posters creator. He won many domestic as well as foreign awards. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Tuesday should bring clear skies around most of the country and day temperatures between -1 and 2 degrees Celsius. Nighttime lows may drop to -7 degrees in places. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, with me, Ruth Franíková. Coming up in today's program, Czech humanitarian organization People in Need has been denied access to eastern Ukraine. Days before the launch of electronic cash registers, Andrej Babiš proposes last-minute changes to the system. We have the roundup of the latest Czech sports news, and later on in the program we speak to the internationally renowned chemist Josef Michl, fresh recipient of an award for lifelong contribution to world science. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Czech humanitarian organization People in Need has been stripped of its accreditation to work in the so-called Donetsk People's Republic, an area of eastern Ukraine presently under the control of Kremlin-backed pro-Russian separatists. People in Need, or Člověk v tísni, has been working in the war-torn area since 2014, distributing tons of food as well as assisting with health, hygiene and other matters related to day-to-day survival. No reason has been given for the accreditation withdrawal, says the NGO. Šimon Pánek is the director of People in Need. Dominik Jun began by asking him if he had any indication of why the accreditation had been cancelled.
We didn't get any official explanation. The cancelling letter is very short. It's just 5-6 sentences, close it and leave. There are some things on the web pages saying that we don't have have a good relation to the population or whatever. But until we will get any official things, it's difficult to react to that. But that's not that important for us. For us, it's important if we will have a chance to negotiate somehow, because we care about the people there. And otherwise, you know, if you work in the conflicts on the both sides, it's not that surprising that you may face some problems.
How exactly does your organization negotiate its presence in eastern Ukraine? Do you negotiate with the separatists? Do you negotiate with the Ukrainian government?
Well, we are working in eastern Ukraine since late summer 2014, so it's more than 2 years. Our mission in Ukraine is responsible for maintaining relations with all possible authorities, both in Kiev, in the regions in eastern Ukraine, and both on the others, on the both sides. And they continuously negotiate with different authorities the humanitarian access. That's the normal part of the job in the conflict zones, of course.
And I understand that this isn't the first time you've experienced difficulties dealing with the local separatists and gaining access to eastern Ukraine.
Yes, particularly complicated is access to the non-governmental control areas, because they introduced the system of accreditation a year and something ago. At that time, all NGOs had to stop the work, and only very few NGOs were granted accreditation to continue after the summer 2015. We were one of them.
So you've been working in the Donetsk area and the Luhansk area, which are both under the control of pro-Russian separatists. So what exactly is your work in these areas, and are you able to continue still in Luhansk?
The humanitarian imperative says clearly that aid should follow needs and vulnerable people, beneficiaries, not who is controlling neither militarily nor politically territory. So we are working all the time on the both sides. It's mainly basic humanitarian assistance, so food, hygienic items, limited self-driven rehabilitation of the houses or flats on the both sides. Again, means windows, doors, some bricks, cement to fix it somehow if your house is shelled. You need to somehow survive the winter.
Director of People in Need Shimon Panek talking there to my colleague Dominic Yoon. Just days before the full launch of a new system linking cash registers in the Czech Republic to a central database, the scheme is back in the headlines. Its architect, the Minister of Finance, is proposing last-minute changes that he says will benefit small business people. However, his opponents have slammed the move. Ian Willoughby reports.
An electronic cash registry system under which Czech restaurants, shops and other businesses would provide information in real time to the country's tax authority is the pet project of Andrej Babiš, the ANO chief and Minister of Finance. After a one-month trial period, the first part of the scheme is due to go live this Thursday. However, Mr. Babiš has now come out with changes to the system. One is that small business people whose annual turnover reaches a quarter of a million crowns or less can opt out and make a flat tax payment instead.
We are proposing that the smallest be able to apply to make a flat tax payment. It's a possibility. I don't think any such entrepreneur will apply during the first phase of the scheme, and in the second phase it will be very few. If people apply and the tax authority finds that they take in a maximum of 250,000 crowns a year and they get approval, then they don't have to take part. But it's not a blanket exception.
Mr. Babiš's tweaks, which also concern online retailers, have been very coolly received by ANO's coalition partners, the Social Democrats. They say he promised no 11th-hour changes. Meanwhile, the minister can expect a stormy ride when the matter is debated in a lower house session starting on Tuesday morning. MPs are readying a number of proposals, either amending the system or doing away with it altogether. Zbigniew Stanjura is the head of the deputies group of the opposition right-wing Civic Democrats, who have long been against the electronic cash registry system. He says Mr. Babiš's new proposal doesn't hold water.
It's not logical, it's even hypocritical. First, the minister places loads of obligations on the smallest entrepreneurs, and then he says in an understanding tone, we want to make things easier for the smallest. If they humbly apply, we will assess them. And if they don't belong to the category of major thieves, then we'll allow them not to be in the system. This doesn't solve anything.
Meanwhile, another Conservative opposition party, Top 09, are calling for the rollout of the system to be put back by 2 years. It should be an interesting week for Mr. Babish's flagship project.
Ian Willoughby with that report, and Ian stays in the studio with the roundup of the latest Czech sports news.
We start today with winter sports, specifically the biathlon, in which the Czech Republic has excelled in recent years. However, the Czech mixed relay team could only manage a seventh place finish in the first biathlon World Cup meeting of the season at Östersund in Sweden. Veronika Vítková, Gabriela Kokalová, Michal Schlesinger and Andrej Moravec were in part let down by the shooting of the women, with coach Zdeněk Vítek suggesting that misses by Vítková, who was first in action, may have been what separated the Czech team from the podium. But Andrej Moravec, who himself didn't record one of his best times, was philosophical about Sunday's result.
It was a pity about the start. We came seventh, just 6 or 7 seconds behind fifth place. But I'm relatively pleased with my section of the race. Somehow I felt that I couldn't attack, but still, the shooting was great.
Meanwhile, Michal Schlesinger says starting the season is never easy.
It's the first competition. We are just gradually getting going and it's hard to compete the first time. You don't know how to set a tempo, how it's going to go. It's kind of all over the place.
Indeed, the Czech Republic's biathlon stars have plenty of time to put things right. Sunday's was the first of almost 70 events in a season that's set to run for more than 100 more days. Soccer, and with exactly half of the rounds played this season in the Czech top flight, Viktoria Plzeň remain on course for a third title in a row. The West Bohemians remain 4 points in front after a 2-0 win over Brno at the weekend, courtesy of strikes by Michal Krmenčík and Michal Juriš. That result means Plzeň will be winter champions, so-called, as next weekend's games are the last before the winter break. Nevertheless, second-place Slavia Prague kept the pressure up on the leaders with a 2-1 win over Mladá Boleslav in the capital. And still 7 points behind Plzeň are Sparta Prague. Fresh from clinching their Europa League group, Sparta continued their winning ways with a 2-1 away victory over Raditz Kralove. Finally, ice hockey and the domestic Extraliga brought a number of surprises on Sunday. Trinets lost 5-4 to Mladá Boleslav after a tense encounter, but remained tied on points in first place with the in-form Liberets, who also lost at home to Litvinov. For their part, Kometa Brno took the chance to catch up with the leaders by beating Chomutov to also take their tally to 51 points. That's all the sports news for today.
Ian Willoughby with the roundup of the latest Czech sports news. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Since 2010, the Neuron Prize has been one of the top honours in the science field here in the Czech Republic. Among the winners this year was the US-based chemist Professor Josef Michl, one of the world's leading experts in his area. And he is Ian Willoughby's guest in this week's edition of One on One.
Last week, the Boulder-based Josef Michl was in his native Prague to receive the prestigious Neuron Award for lifelong contribution to world science in the field of chemistry. Professor Michl became one of the planet's top experts in his area, organic photochemical reactions, after deciding not to return to Czechoslovakia from abroad in the wake of the 1968 Soviet invasion. When we spoke, a question about his experiences at the end of World War II, he was 5 in 1945, prompted an extraordinary story. One day in February 1945, little Josef's mother wanted to take him and his brother home via their usual route, up Vinohradska Street. But the boys wanted to see some machine at the main train station, and the three were taking a parallel street home when an air raid began.
There was a German soldier there with a gun, and the sirens started to sound. And he told my mother that she must go into a cellar, into one of the houses nearby. Of course, you listen to a soldier with a gun. So we did, but the door was locked, and we couldn't get in. So she tried the next house, and the door was locked. We couldn't get in. And the next house, and the door was locked. And then the bombs started to fall, mostly incendiary bombs. And she put us against the wall of one of the houses and sort of leaned over us. And I was angry at her because I wanted to go and take a close look at one of these incendiary bombs, but she wouldn't let me. And then a big bomb fell, and all the glass in all the windows in the house where we stood came down, crashing to the street. I remember she washed pieces of glass shreds out of her hair for a couple of weeks after that. Then there was a lull in the bombing, and she found a house that was actually open. So we went in there and were in the cellar. The roof was on fire, and people made a human chain carrying out up pails of water. And again, we wanted to help, but she wouldn't let us. We had a terrible mother. And so then we finally made it home and discovered that the main street on which she wanted to go had many dead people who were killed by bombs because the bombs fell mostly there. And then decades later, I was in Utah, that's where I lived at the time, at one of the state parks, Goblin. And another car pulled up and a family came out and we started to talk. And he noticed that I speak with an accent, and he asked, where are you from? And I said, from Prague. He said, oh, Prague, you know, I bombed Prague during the Second World War. And I looked at him and said, well, you know, when was that? And after a while, we established that he was a navigator in one of the aircraft that were throwing bombs at us. And he said, you know, it was a mistake. We thought we were bombing Dresden.
Wow, that's quite a story. What was it that first drew you to the field of chemistry?
It was an experiment that my four-grade teacher made. She heated potassium permanganate in a test tube that produces oxygen. And she took an ember and stuck it into the test tube, and it burst into flame. And I thought, geez, this is what I want to do in my life.
Well, years later, you went from Czechoslovakia to Houston to work. How did you find doing chemistry in the U.S. in those days compared to in communist Czechoslovakia?
Well, it was very different. Access to equipment, access to chemicals, lab where everything was much easier.
Sometimes people say that some areas of study were kind of politically neutral during the communist era. Was chemistry one of those?
Yes. Many people who were my classmates actually didn't want to be chemists at all. They would have liked to study journalism or to study law or other humanities, but they were not acceptable because they had the wrong cadre origin, so to say.
You were abroad when 1968 happened, when the Soviets invaded Czechoslovakia. Was it an easy decision to not come back here?
No, it certainly was not easy. I returned from Texas in 67, and then I was somewhat politically active during the Prague Spring. I was one of the founding members of the Club of Engaged Non-Party Members. So when I was in Scandinavia, in Norway actually at the time, for a few weeks at School of Quantum Chemistry, for which I received a fellowship, and the invasion occurred, I hesitated for several weeks before taking a decision. It was not at all clear what will happen to people who were politically active, whether they'd be just shot or hanged, or whether they would be only put in jail or just lose their jobs. And that was a consideration in the decision-making. Plus, I had really enough of the regime, of the system. It was hard. But deciding, you know, to leave family behind, everybody I knew, all my friends from the youth and so on, it's not an easy decision.
If we could speak about your work in general, you have helped improve mobile telephones, computers, solar panels. Which of your inventions or innovations or discoveries has had the most impact, do you think? Please don't be modest here.
I think that the description you gave is not correct. I'm working on the fundamentals of science that might possibly one day improve mobile telephones or solar cells or other things. It is fundamentals that attract me. And I think that perhaps the most important contribution was understanding how photochemical reactions of organic compounds actually occur, how to best describe them in a way that allows you to make predictions for other reactions and extrapolate and so on and so forth. And that took decades, work on this. And the work I'm doing now on singlet fission, which relates to solar cells, is actually a continuation of that same thing.
And is it particularly satisfying for you when you have this kind of real-world impact? Or are you equally satisfied achieving things in the lab?
I am really most pleased by figuring out some mystery. If I can figure out why it is that things work the way they do, that gives me pleasure.
From your years of coming back here to Prague, how do you think teaching chemistry and maybe the sciences in general compares here to in Western countries?
Well, I have not really taught here lately, and my impressions may be outdated because the knowledge I have of how one teaches here is some decades old. In general, I have the impression that students learn a great deal of material, sort of facts, here, probably more than in the States or other Western countries at the same age. But they are less creative. Perhaps naturally, innately, they would be just as creative, because after all, I think that the mental and physical properties of people are basically the same in every nation. But the way that they are taught, the way that the classes are structured, they are not challenged to be creative and independent. And they don't ask questions nearly as much as students do in my classes in the States.
You gave $100,000 to help young scientists here in the Czech Republic. That's a big amount by any standards. What prompted you to do that?
Well, I felt gratitude to the institution that gave me the initial information, the initial knowledge that I had to have to get launched in a career in science, in chemistry. And I felt that it would only be fitting to make it possible for the next generation, actually more than over next, you know, the young generation of today, to benefit from some of what I have accumulated, gained as a result. So, yeah, gratitude.
You've just received the Neuron Award here in Prague. You've received many prizes and honors over the years, but does it mean something more to you to get this kind of award here at home?
Of course it does. You know that nobody is a prophet in his own village, right? So if the place where you grew up, place where people remember how you wetted your pants when you were a little boy, acknowledges what you have accomplished, it's special. Of course it is special. I really appreciate it.
US-based chemist Professor Josef Michel was Ian Willoughby's guest in that edition of One on One. And that brings us to the end of today's program here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franková. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.